Blog Talk Radio.
How are you guys doing today? I'm your host, Carlos Martin, and I want to welcome you to Criminalized by Color, brought to you by the Tribe Family Channel. And I am here honored to speak with Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., a civil rights leader and activist from the Toluga Nine. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm fine there. Can I call you Carlos?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Not being disrespectful by calling you Mr. Martin, but I just feel that a close association from one brother to another brother, and you can call me Joseph.
Mr. Joseph.
It just makes me feel better, and so I'm really glad and honored, really, to be able to talk with such an outstanding young man, because I checked your bio out, and it's just awesome, in terms of your experience. So I'm just interested in hearing what you have to share with me and others regarding those experiences with regards to, you having to be a victim of police brutality. But anyway, I'm just here to listen to what you have to share with me.
Absolutely, sir. Well, one, before I get into my story, I would love for you to tell everyone your story, because without your story, I wouldn't have a story, because it was because of the sacrifice and the things that you guys did during your time frame to stand up for our equality, which has allowed me to be in the position that I'm in right now. So if you could just share with everyone some of the things that you've been through and what the Tuluga 9 was all about, I would greatly be honored to hear that story from you.
Thank you, Carlos. My story, which took place about 58 years ago, I have to say that it was by way of divine intervention, because I stepped to the campus of Tuluga Southern Christian College at the age of 23 on a ministerial scholarship. And it was my understanding that, you know, Medgar, Mr. Medgar Wiley Evers was going to be the featured speaker there in Caldwell Hall, not Caldwell Hall, but Wadsworth Chapel. And it just so happened that I heard the other members of the NAACP Youth Council, they said, yes, Medgar's going to speak, and he's going to tell us about his future plans for trying to desegregate the state of Mississippi, especially Jackson, Mississippi. So I attended that rally, Carlos, and was just really, really inspired by listening to Mr. Evers' speech regarding his plans that he had that he was thinking about continuing the movement. He had already been involved in voter registration, and also he had been involved in the boycotting of the businesses in downtown Jackson. And then he was also contemplating on integrating the schools. And so I was just really thrilled to have heard him. And after his speech, later on that night, the members of the NAACP Youth Council, they said, well, do you want to become a member? Well, growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, and being really involved in the Jim Crow segregation social system, I said, oh, yes, you know, that I'm in. And next thing I knew that, once I joined the NAACP Youth Council, Carlos, they elected me to become the president of that organization. That's why I said it was divine intervention.
Yes,
and I was 23 years old, and so that's how I became the president. I had no choice in the matter, and then. I would say a couple of meetings later with Medgar Evers there, he laid out his future plan for desegregating the all-white library. And he said that's the next thing that was on his agenda. And so I would say about January of 1961, we began implementing those plans, and we had mock demonstrations, Carlos. There, I think it was on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but I know there in Caldwell Hall, we went through what is known as a brainwashing session, and some of the members of the NAACP Youth Council, they served as adversaries to preventing us from really moving forward with our planned demonstration. So some of them were adversaries. We were the so-called demonstrators, and man, they did a great job doing the mob demonstration. He's calling us, you know, the N-word and pouring water on us and just anything that they could say to arouse anger from us. And so actually we continued those mob demonstrations, Carlos, until the very day of March 27th, 1961, 100 years from the Civil War, after when the Civil War began, 100 years later, here we, that Monday morning, entered the all-white main library in the city of Jackson, Mississippi. And
wow.
when we walked in there, and actually there was a moment of surprise, of course, by the library staff, and we were there to purchase books that for our college research program, and we knew that
okay.
the black library, George Washington Carver Library, did not have the books that we really were in need of. And so we knew that the main library in Jackson, really, they had those books. Well, with some reluctance, you know, they chose really not to assist us. And so we just went about really trying to find the books on our own. But somehow or another,
okay.
someone said, call the police. And as a result of us sitting there, not moving, Chief Pierce and several of his police officers came in, ordered us to leave. We refused to leave, and they arrested us. That was my first experience of being criminalized by color, because they charged us with a breach of peace, took us to jail. And then later on, we went to court. We were given a 30-day suspended sentence, and we paid a $100 fine. And that was a moment when I was in jail, Carlos, that I thought I was going to die, because I had a wife and two children. And that's an experience that I don't ever want to experience, especially knowing the history of the state of Mississippi. So I really thought I thought about the inevitability of death. And that's our story regarding the Tougaloo Nine. We were the first group of young college students to stage the first sit-in in an all-white library. And we were recognized for our courageous demonstration on July the 27th, 2014, Carlos, by the executive director, Patty Fierce, of the library system, 2014. But we were given a medallion and also a video of some of the library aides doing the reenactment of our demonstration.
Wow.
And that 2014, and just to see these young people portraying us, it was just a moment that I'm still dealing with right now in terms of the historical meaning and significance of that. And we are now, December of 2017, they have a large life-size poster of the Tougaloo Nine with our mug shots above the life-size posters in the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum, Carlos. And on August the 17th, August the 17th of 2017, we have a marker standing outside of the old library where the demonstration took place 58 years ago. So just the idea of thinking you made history in the state where both of your parents were born. I'm still really grappling with that.
Right. You said a lot of things that I can relate to. And it's baffling me right now listening to you tell your story, because I look at what you went through then, right? And then what's going on present.
Yes.
And you talked about how you guys prepared and you had mock boards. For me, in my situation, your mock board was like my basic training joining the military. Because
right.
you had to learn
right.
how to control your attitude, your temperature, and you got pushed to different levels. So before
right.
I talk about how that affected me, I would love to see, because most people can see that the building is on fire, right? And be like, oh my God,
right.
look, the building is on fire, and I feel bad for the people inside the building. But it's a total
right.
different experience for the people in the building.
Yes.
And the people in the building and in the fire, it affects them differently than the people outside the fire. So I would love
exactly.
for you to explain how it mentally affected you to prepare for something like this. Because life don't prepare you for this type of hate.
Right, exactly.
How did it mentally, yeah.
Well, actually, you know, it's one thing in terms of being involved in the, you know, the mob demonstrations, and the practice that was implemented was effective. You had to suppress your anger and how you felt about growing up in a segregated Jim Crow system like that for 30 years in Memphis, Tennessee, and also witnessing a Greyhound driver there at one of the midway stops when I was about 10 or 11 coming from Belzona, Mississippi. And I don't know what was said, but I still remember that big, fat, burly, redneck bus driver turning around and hitting my mother in the face, Carlos, and knocking her down onto the gravel. And I turned my mother over and her face was bloody. But I had no recourse. And we got on the Greyhound bus and went right on to the back. So this idea of in those mob demonstrations, it just really, really brought all of that anger that I've had toward that system. But yet I knew I could not retaliate because it would have been to my disadvantage to do so. But the
right.
reality of it is after those mob demonstrations, I mean, it's time for you to walk through those doors knowing that this is an all-flight main library.
This could be your last breath. I don't even understand that. You don't know.
And
you
not
know
knowing
that outcome.
Not knowing the outcome. See, that's what I'm saying. Not knowing the outcome of the fate of your life based upon the history of the state of Mississippi with regards to lynchings and murder and race hatred. And so what happened was we knew we were going to get out of jail that same day, that evening on Monday. But what happened was the chief of police did not post bond like he was supposed to have done. He's going to keep us in jail another day and a half. So after that first day went by, Carlos, I just knew that we were going to be hanging from a tree. I mean, just like I said, being inside of the house with the fire burning, people don't really know what you go through psychologically, you know, mentally, and I mean, and knowing that your life is hanging in the balance.
Yes, sir.
Now, see, when you say that, right, people don't understand the mental aspect, because even though you got out, that don't mean you free. Even though you were paid your
price, come on now,
and your wounds will heal, that don't mean you free. Because now you're looking over your shoulder of the result of your courage. And see, that's why your story touches me so much. Because here's the thing, right? I was wrongfully beaten in my military uniform, and I put my life on the line for my country. But I want to skip over that whole story because I want to go more into your story, and I just want to tell you the end results, right? So I did an interview with Jake Tapper. And when I was on Jake Tapper, in front of the whole world, he did the setup question. And the setup was, if you see Officer Benjamin Fields again, what would you say to him? Now, what he expected was for me to be an angry black man on national television to increase his ratings. I feel. Let me reword that. I feel as if that's what the expectation was, because most people do news for ratings, not because they care about what the subject is going on. Let me say it that way. So when I said I forgive him, my forgiveness had nothing to do with really him, but everything for myself, right? And sometimes our people don't understand when you say forgiveness. They think that you're not angry. They think that you're not mad. They think that you don't care. No, I care. I'm angry. I'm full of rage. But there's more than one way to fight back than just fighting the back emotionally. So what I did was I didn't allow that one moment to define my whole life. I didn't go get a gun. I didn't go act a fool. Because sometimes I feel in our history what we need to understand is the pen is mightier than the sword. And what I mean by that is me fighting someone will only leave a bruise, but that bruise will heal. But me writing a book will last forever. Me creating the movie will last forever. And I had Mr. Earl Sewell on the last show, and he talked about what are you doing today that affects your past and what's going to affect something 250 years down in the future. How will you be remembered? And I just want us to understand that there's more than one way of fighting back. It's not the fact that you keep your peace when your mother got hit that you wasn't angry. Because that's probably one of the hardest things that you ever had to do in life. That was your strength. It wasn't the fact that you were weak when you did the mock board and they poured water on you and they called you the N-word and they called you out your name to be prepared to face something that most people won't face. It's easier to talk about someone on the court than to be the person on the shot taking the court. And sometimes...
But that's why, really, you know, on these programs and talking with someone who have had the experience that you are speaking of, in connecting with your experience, somehow or another, even though, I'm calm and I'm a respectful citizen, of America, and you think that you really have gotten over those suppressed feelings, but when I talk with someone like you, I'm reliving those experiences that I thought that I had suppressed, and it's almost like reliving those periods of time. Because we do have to watch what we say, because in an atmosphere now, they take a lot of things that we might say out of character. We have to really be careful.
Well, when you're black, passion is received as aggression. it's crazy how that's manipulated. Like, I relived everything that you said when you were on the bus and you said they hit your mother. And then your mother was sitting there bleeding. What I relived is when my ex-wife was taking pictures of me getting beat up. I see her holding the cell phone and being thrown into the car, being handcuffed and already detained. But that wasn't enough. He picked her up by the back of her arms and then slammed her into the ground face first in front of my face. Not only did he do that, he sexually harassed her right there in my face. And there's nothing I could do about it because guess what? I got handcuffed. I have two other officers on me. But even though everything was stripped from me, that still didn't stop my soul from crying. That still didn't stop me from hurting. That still affects me as a man today, not being able to protect the woman that I love the way I was supposed to be able to protect her. So I relate to you when you say,
Carlos, when did this happen?
Okay, so I was wrongfully jumped in October 24th, 2005. I was coming home. Me and my ex had just got back from Germany. She was in the 212 MASH. She went to Iraq and Afghanistan, and I went to Bosnia. When I got stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, I was doing a uniform inspection on my soldier, PSC Carlisle. I was leaving for the day, and before this, I had just won Soldier of the Month. I had just got done winning trophies for my unit or whatever else for football. I was on my way home. There was a white officer in my neighborhood looking for a white male flashing little kids. The officer was there before I got there. So he's driving around the neighborhood, and I'm actually riding behind him going towards my house. And so the way my parking lot is set up is like a rectangle. So he went in the rectangle first, and then I entered behind him. Eventually, we became parallel. I acknowledged him by nodding my head. To me, that was a gesture of hello. But see, in your days, they might have called it reckless eyeballing. You know what I mean? I know when I say that, you'll understand what I mean. Some of the viewers, if you don't understand what reckless eyeballing is when you look at a person and they feel as if you're looking at them disrespectfully. So you can go to jail, you can be beaten, anything could happen to you back in the day when they had Jim Crow law. So I did was acknowledge him by saying hello with the cowboy tip of my hat saying hello. I park my car, I get out my car, I walk towards my door. I hear a car peel off. I turn around naturally to see what's going on. I see an officer running towards me. Hey, you, come here. I'm out here for a noise violation. Excuse me, sir? It couldn't have been me. I just got home. Plus, I have an officer that lives above me. Well, give me your license and registration anyway. Okay, no problem. I'm going to slowly get my license and registration out and hand it to you. So I handed him my documents. My picture license was a paper license because I lost my picture license in Germany. So DMV sends you a paper license, which is a legal document to drive on until they send you the updated picture license. So when I handed him the paper license, he was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, dude, if you just calm down, you can see I'm a soldier and I just got back from Germany. He cuts me off. You will not address me as dude. I'm a Richland County officer of the law. I was like, well, you address me by hey, you. He was like, well, that's because I don't know your name. Well, sir, I don't know your name either. Next thing you know, he slams me on the ground and starts beating on me. I cover up in the ball to protect myself. You know what I mean? Because I'm not going to fight a police officer. That's a losing battle. I want to live. So I cover myself. The police officer's mother comes downstairs, who gets my ex, who was studying to be a nurse. Knocks on the door. She comes outside. Oh, my God, what are you doing to my husband? She sees him beating on me. She runs back in the house, and she gets her camera phone. Mind you, I used to play semi-pro football for the Carolina Titans. Semi-pro. And all the kids used to go to my football games. They would hold the down markers. So everyone, I was well-known in the community. So all the women and children, they come out to watch what is going on, and they can't believe their eyes that, look, we do the same job. My job is to protect the flag, which is our country. Your job is to protect us but how can you protect me if you fear me? I don't understand this, sir. We serving the same purpose, but you beating me in my uniform. And then you being racial. So then he makes all these racist comments how I'm nothing but another black statistic. He calls me a nigga, talks about how he's glad Johnny Cochran is dead. All these racial remarks that he makes, right? But he panics when he sees all the women and children watching. And then he sees that his picture's being taken, right? Then he gets on the radio, code 1033, officer in distress, officer in distress. Now, I understand why all the other police officers arrived the way they arrived. But we both know that you're supposed to get trained. And in training, you're supposed to analyze the situation before you just react.
Exactly.
So that way you're prepared. Exactly. Because as a soldier, we have your codes, Geneva Convention codes. And if we break that, then we are committing treason against the flag. Well, why is it that the police don't have that same type of code? Because if you're not following your training, you're no longer a police officer, you're a bully.
with a gun.
Right.
So
right.
then he says, get her. She has pictures of me, and I need that phone. So Deputy Joseph Clark runs up on my ex. He slams her into the car, puts her in a full Nelson, drops the cell phone, handcuffs her. After she's already handcuffed, picks her up by the back of her arms like he was in the WWF and body slams her into the ground face first. Now, the crowd was fearful watching what was going on. I'm screaming out to God. I'm screaming to her, baby, are you going to be all right? Baby, are you okay? Then the other police officer's mother show up. She finally gets there. And now when a woman officer is at the scene, a woman is supposed to search a woman to prevent sexual harassment charges.
Right.
Three different
right.
officers sexually harass my wife right there in front of me. They pick her up. They put her in the back of the car.
Oh,
then
my God.
They call EMS because he used a whole can of mace on me. And then he accused me of being on drugs because the mace didn't have an effect on me. But when you're trained, like you were trained at the mock board, you know what to do in a hostile situation. Well, I was
right,
trained
exactly.
by the military, so I know
exactly.
what to do in a hostile situation. So when someone maces you, if you close your eyes, you hold your breath, you don't scratch your skin,
right.
it's not going to bother
right.
you as much as it's supposed to. It might burn, but you'll live. You'll be okay. So when I closed my eyes and I held my breath, and I didn't react like a normal civilian would, he became more violent. He started kicking me and punching me in my stomach and everything else. But, you know, when you serve a good guy, you're going to be all right. You can live through that, right? So then when they call the paddy wagon, they tell my ex that they're going to put her, they're going to take her to the hotel. Now, see, when you down south, police will always take you to the jail. Sometimes they beat you up and drop you off in the woods. They do all different type of reckless different things behind the back.
Yeah,
right?
That was Pablo Canal, but that was what I was going to ask you. You were in North Carolina, right?
South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, Fort Jackson.
Brother. When you mentioned Columbia, South Carolina, brother, and I'm doing a lot of research about Reconstruction period, brother, and how that period from 65 to 1877, and we were given our rights and everything, and those rights really was taken away from us by violence. But man, South Carolina, brother, you don't play around with those people in South Carolina, really. So,
yes,
so man, when you say
no,
South Carolina, I mean,
yes, sir.
And all in my history, man, South Carolina comes through basically with regards to police brutality and the disenfranchisement of the black people, man.
Well, can I do you one better, sir? The same officer who beat me up in my military uniform, they sent him to a high school, which is called Spring Valley High School. This is the same officer who beat up that 16-year-old girl in the classroom. Let's dig a little further. Now this officer has been fired. The solicitor who was over my case, he just got done being sent to prison. And now the FBI is investigating that same whole police department for its corruption. And my case is sitting at the United States Supreme Court waiting to be heard. But how do you tell America that soldiers are getting beat up? Because if you ever admit that, that means Colin Kaepernick was right. But you don't want Colin Kaepernick
right.
to be right because you want to change what his stance for equality was. You want to make it seem like he's disrespecting the military. Well, how can he be disrespecting the military when the military is still getting beat up by the police, too, because of the color of their skin?
Right.
I don't understand.
You said that they took your girlfriend to a hotel.
No. The police officer told my wife, my ex-wife, they were going to take her to the hotel. Now, the officer who was driving the paddy wagon heard that statement. When we went to court, they lied so bad and tampered with evidence, we got the highest verdict of being not guilty. He tried to say hotel meant jailhouse. I've never heard no one use hotel for jail. Are you serious? So that's how as an officer, that's how you represent the rest of your brothers in blue. That's how we talk to women. That's how we regard women in America, that we could tell them that we're going to take them to a hotel, and that's respectful? I guess so, because the president says you can grab them by the, you know what?
Yeah.
So if the president can say something like that, why shouldn't officers be able to say what they're saying?
Just by you being dressed in a military uniform and having given your life for this country to that police officer, just the idea of you being a brown brother, that gave him really a lease on having to assault you. Nothing else matters.
That's why in my book, chapter 4 is called Military or Not, You're Still Three-Fifths of a Man. Because that's how we looked at. That's how we do. That's how society or Hollywood paints a picture of the black image. When we're doctors,
right.
We're lawyers, we're educated. We came from nothing and became everything.
Right.
So, like I was sharing with Ms. Beverly about the last chapter of my book. I'm going to give you this preview, right? This is the last thing I left my book with, right? And it says,
right.
President Trump, you're so amazing. One good thing about President Trump being in office is now people are not hiding who they really are. And I would rather know you don't
right.
like me than to fake a smile and try to stab me in my
right.
back.
Right.
But I said, President Trump, you're so amazing. Congratulations on becoming president. Because out of everyone that was born in the United States, that is an accomplishment. Whew. And I commend you. But it makes me wonder, does America have PTSD? Because when has it ever been okay to come to someone's home and take their daughter, their son, their brother, their sister, their husband and wife, and tell them that's the American dream? Because that sounds like an American nightmare to me. Then you said, grab women by the... Go ahead, sir.
Well, see, the reason why, really, you know, I'm concerned about the times that we are living in, you know, especially after the Civil Rights, 1964, Act is passed, you know, and then you followed by the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and then, of course, Dr. King was assassinated, you know. But I'm saying here now, it seems as though, you know, everything is all right, you know, equality is really, really running rampant. But what I'm worried about is according to the FBI research, hate crimes has been on the rise since 2016, and for me, during these times, I mean, people don't know, especially people of color, they really have to proceed with caution, and they really better watch what they say. Because the hate crimes and the white supremacist ideology is live and well, Carlos, as you know now. All is not well at this time in our country.
That's what I'm trying to get people to wake up and see, Mr. Joseph, is that we're living in the evolution of slavery. We're not free. So my question to you would be, the sacrifices that you made, one, you guys never got enough credit. You know, but the sacrifices that you've made for us, do you feel as if it's almost in vain to a certain extent because of how lost sometimes we are as a people?
No, because early on in our program, you said really in essence that because of what we did 58 years ago, you are now really standing on our shoulders. And what we did, because we did not get the national press, Dr. King and the Freedom Riders, there are so many young people as well as people really, your age and my age, they still do not know of that history that we were involved in.
Right.
And so what I'm saying is that by you and I having this very important program, discussing our experiences, it's not in vain, because what we did or what we're talking about now, hopefully there may be another a black youngster or a brown youngster that's out there that we may really have an inspirational effect on. And I'm looking back in my research, I mean, like Frederick Douglass and Ida B. Wells and all of Harriet Tubman. What I'm saying is that people of color, especially when incidents happen to us, like what we've experienced, we have got to tell the story, because we really are part of the continuum of the stepping stone of history, still trying to reach that level of equality and respect and dignity that still remain elusive even as I speak. So we are just a continuum of all of the others that have gone on before.
Yes,
and
sir.
So I can never, ever really, because like I said, you know, you never met me and I've never met you. But look at the commonality of our experience in the system.
Yes, sir.
Now, I don't know how old you are. What's your age?
I'm 39.
39. See what I mean? The last brother that I spoke with on the program, Men of Honor, he was 50. You see what I'm saying? So here you are, 39. The brother was 50. Brother Carlos, I just celebrated my 82nd birthday, April 14th of this year. And so when I sit back and I listen to you and I listen to the other brother, it just lets me know how far I have come in terms of staying in the struggle, because we never can retire. It's always going to be some incident that you're going to have to really guard against because of the increased rise of hate crimes since 2016.
Yes, sir.
It's never over.
We just had a young man pass away. He was doing some amazing things, Mr. Nipsey Hussle. Family, he had a slogan that said, "The marathon continues." And it is a marathon. But I feel personally, it's only a marathon because we're not running the race together. We wait for different martyrs to stand up to do what we can all do collectively.
Right.
And I feel if we do it collectively, then it will turn into a sprint. But in order to do that, what are you willing to sacrifice to get the equality that you say you want?
Well, there it
because
is.
Because it comes with a price.
There it is. You see? You know? And it's like one young brother told me. He said, and I'm mentoring him, he said, Papa Joe, he called me Papa Joe. He said, "One thing I have to let you know, Papa Joe, you put your work in." And so now, you know, here I'm connecting with a brother that is still working. You know, I'm retired now. But see, I'm depending on brothers like you. Really?
Yes, sir.
Because you don't have no recourse in terms of changing your mind, because through divine intervention, the universe has chosen you to be a victim of that experience. And I'm an ordained minister. That's why I always refer to God's intervention. We are chosen, Brother Carlos. Why are we chosen? Because look at what the subject matter that we are speaking of. And it is an old, you know? And
yes,
so the only thing that I can say to you is continue the struggle. Remember this radio program that we're having, because I don't even see any end. I mean, it's just like, yeah, well, we're all right. We love each other. But on the other hand, who is stepping up, really, to challenge even the ills, the civil rights progress that we made? In spite of that, by the police brutality, it's still running.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Like, I know we have young gentlemen like Colin Kaepernick who stepped up. You have people like Nick Cannon who's stepping up to continue Dr. Sebi's work. You have a lot of people stepping up. I'm just saying, I feel personally, I don't know if we're afraid of the word responsibility, but responsibility is no more than the ability to respond, which we all have. We all have the ability to respond. We all have the ability to look in the mirror to say, if I want better, I have to do better. I don't need to look left or right. The better is in me.
Right.
And I think that's the genius that God has given everyone with the free will. It's the power of choice, but you have to choose to do something. You have to choose to get up and see and make a difference. Because here's a, you know, here's a funny thing about it. Whether you want to do it or not, and I'm saying this to all the listeners, whether you choose to make this choice or not, your life is on the line anyway. Because it could be you. It could be you. And I just have to be real. I don't want to get on here and lie to people. You know what I'm saying? Because every day we wake up is an opportunity to change our future. But it's a closer day to our grave. So what are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? Why not be great today?
Yeah.
And I tell you this, to be great today.
Well, you know, I hate to even have these thoughts, but, you know, I'm waiting, really, to see who the next Sandra Bland is going to be that hung herself in that jail in Texas. I'm waiting to see who will be the next Michael Brown or the Amir Rice. Trayvon.
Yes,
you see what I mean? Because if we as a people do not take a stand against the injustice that we know, especially police brutality, that still exists, there will be another black or brown victim out there. And if you don't be careful, you're trying to be safe in your own little cocoon and saying, oh, well, you know, that I'm not going to get involved in that. You might be next.
Now, see,
you might be
said that, right? Because my brother, now, I love my brother to death. And I'm so glad that my brother felt this way about me when I was going through what I went through. My brother, Marquise, was like, if I just keep my head down, if I just keep my nose clean, if I just do right and live in my brother, everything will be okay. And then I told him what happened to me. He was like, hold on. What did you do? Something had to happen. No. Life don't work like that. My brother lived in Chicago.
Right.
And then he started to step out of his bubble and look around. And then it just finally dawned on him. And he called me and he was crying and he apologized to me for his just lack of knowledge because he didn't know. Well, I want people to understand, just because it ain't affecting your home don't mean it don't affect you.
Right. Because the thing about it is, as long as you are a brother of color or a sister of color, anything can happen to you at any moment. And it does not have to do with whether you did the right thing or not.
Yes, sir.
And
be like, I thank you for your bravery, right? I thank you for the conversation we're having. But even with all the thank yous and the praise that I give you, I understand when we get off this phone, you still live with everything that you've been through.
Well, exactly.
And you still
got to carry it through. Exactly. Right, because the thing about it is, you know, and I think about it often, had they taken us out of the jail, like, which was the usual routine, mob shows up, take us all out, and hang us by the neck till we're dead. You know, I often think about, well, what if we really were killed 58 years ago? And we did not really have any national attention, no TV attention. The fact of the matter is we was just recognized for what we did in 2014, 53 years later, Carlos. So what really was accomplished?
I get you, Mr. Joseph. When you say that, I got out the military. When they tried to put me out the Army, they tried to put me out with 0%. This was in 2005. It is 2019 right now. In 2017, I just got my 100% retirement, and I'm fighting to still try to get my back pay as we speak in the middle of this journey, right? And when you say that, it makes me look at, God, why am I still here? Like I understand that I'm alive and I'm grateful, but why me? Why am I Trayvon? Because we got the same last name. Why am I Philando? Why am I not any of these other people? And it feel like the only reason why I'm here and my mission and why I can't shake this thing or let it go is to be able to speak for the voiceless. I'm going to send you my short film. It's called The Evolution of Slavery. I believe you will enjoy it. Enjoy it. I mean, we have directors out there, you know, that's wanting to make a difference. Miss Tracy Twinkie Bird, she just wrote a movie, or just a short called 1960. Oh, my God. She wants to read.
Yeah, my friend lady of mine just bought me the DVD title 13, which was directed by Ava DuVernay.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very interesting because, yeah, the Constitution says that we are all free with regards to people of color except the criminal. That was that loophole. And they enacted the convict leasing program back there after Reconstruction to rebuild the South. And so they used that in any black man that was vagrant or without work or whatever, they were arrested. And I mean it. I mean it's amazing, especially now with the mass incarceration of people of color in the criminal justice system. So you know, how much time we have?
We got 7 amazing minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say this in terms of the remaining minutes that I have. I am very, very appreciative of having met such a young brother like yourself, and knowing that it's brothers like you that has picked up the torch in terms of where me and my 8 colleagues left off 58 years ago. So the only thing that I can say is, man, is how proud I am to know you, and you are an inspiration to me. And the only reason why we are having this conversation is it has only come through divine intervention.
Yes,
and thank you for blessing me with this opportunity.
I am so humbly grateful to take the torch from you. Because you ran your race. And I just want you to know, in the words of Nipsey, the marathon will continue. I'm just asking all the listeners to join us as a family on the Tribe Family Channel to turn this into a sprint. I mean, the Bible says, united, man can accomplish anything. We got to come united, you guys. We got to get back to the essence of love. Like, somehow we've been sitting in this boiling pot for so long of these Jim Crow laws, of being brainwashed, of colorism and light skin versus dark skin and rich versus poor, the haves versus the have-nots, and we forgot about color. You know, we forgot about the communication. You know what I'm saying? We at the end of the day, I'm not trying to put God on nobody, right? You can call them higher power, higher energy, frequency, whatever you want to call them. But I just want to tell you this. God is love, and we forgot what love feels like. It's okay to say hi. It's okay to congratulate somebody on their success. It's okay to pass knowledge on so other people can be successful. We got to get back to it. Glenn has to sharpen iron, and we have to do it. And that's why I'm so thankful for this radio show. I mean, on June 2nd, my guest will be the founder of Watts on 103rd Street, Rhythm Band, Mr. Charles Wright. He'll be discussing his book about family sharecropping beginnings, up from where we've come.
I remember his hit song, Express Yourself. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Express Yourself? Yeah, I remember that.
You know, like, it's so right, because I feel like life is like a video game, right? And at the end of every video game, sir, there's a boss that you have to beat. They say different levels, different devils, right? Well, I feel like level one is you. And because anybody can tell you that you're amazing, you're talented, and you can do this, but if you don't believe it yourself, you'll never get to the next level. Level two is family, because sometimes family is going to support the movement, and sometimes they're not. But it's still your God-given gift to take care of the talent that he gave you.
Level three is
your friends. You know, the people you hang out with. Now, are they your distraction, or are you their distraction? Level four is your heart. The Bible says be careful who you give your heart to, right?
That's
level four reminds you of Neo walking in the Matrix, wanting to become the one. A pretty lady in a red dress comes by, and he turns around and he looks. But she has a gun to his head. How many people have we allowed in our lives that distracted us from where we were supposed to go? Level five is opportunity. We say we want all these cool things in life, right? But if you get it too soon, the same thing that you get might be the thing that might kill you. So you got to be patient. The next level is level opportunity. It says piss poor planning leads to piss poor production, right? Someone's been playing this game longer than you. Mr. Joseph, you have been playing this game longer than me, so I am looking for a mentor. Anytime you have the time and chance, please continue to mentor me, because you've navigated this game for, 81 years or 82 years?
Well, I like I said, when they closed those jail cell doors on me, I had no idea in terms of whether I would be talking with anybody. But I always go back to divine intervention, brother Collins, is because had I known when I arrived there in the fall of 1960 on the campus of Tougaloo that I would really be laying my life on the line, knowing that I've got a wife and two kids, I don't believe that I would be having this conversation with you. So that's why I said, what we were talking about, I mean, you can call him God or Yahweh or whatever. I call it the universe. In other words, I knew that I was chosen to get there on that campus and to do what we did, like you were chosen on that day that you were accosted by the police department. And it's something that we could not avoid not being involved in. It's our spirit of commitment. It's our spirit of commitment. And when you're committed, really, to fighting for the rights of yourself as well as others, there definitely is no kind of restraint at all. You just burst out with knowing what you got to do.
Yes, sir. Well, that's an amazing way to bring the show to a close. We probably got like 30 seconds left, so I want to just thank my guests for coming on the show. Please come back again. I want to get some more information from you. You know, they say iron sharpens iron. Thank you guys for joining us. This is Criminalized by Color. I'm your host, Carlos Martin, and I am here with the amazing, amazing activist, just godly man, Mr. Joseph Johnson Jr. I love you, man. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, thank you so much, Carlos. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. You guys have an amazing, blessed day. Make sure you tune in to the next show on June 2nd. Same time, same number. We're going to have a great show. We love you guys, and we just want to encourage you guys to invite more people to come out and join us. Have a good time with us. Share with us. Laugh with us. Cry with us. Whatever it is that you need for your healing, you can get it right here on Criminalized by Color.
Okay, then. That'll be at 5 p.m. California time?
It's 6 p.m. here, sir. It just turned 6 p.m. Man, that was sir, your story is amazing.
Okay. But here, if I want to tune in on June 2nd, it would be 5 p.m. here, I think.
Yes, sir. I'll talk about California time. Man, your story is so, inspiring. Like, you don't understand. You've lit a fire under me that just can't be put out. You know, I'm actually directing a movie right now called A Warren from the Ground. It's named after my book. It's going to be a short, and it's about the incident of what happened to me with the police officer, you know. So just being able to be a part of your legacy, even though we don't know each other, to pass this on to our friends, our families, our loved ones, to everyone who tunes in to Criminalize the Killer, it's, man, like you said, it ain't no coincidence. It's just divine intervention.
Well, that's right. And I'm glad we can end the program with that, with those thoughts. It's divine intervention.
I would like to come in and thank both of you gentlemen. This is Beverly Black, and I am the creator of Criminalized by Color on Tri-Family Channel. And I want to thank you, Mr. Carlos Martin, for interviewing and dialoguing with Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. And I want you to know that he, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., is on your brother's station, Voices of Wisdom. So on August 1st, 2019, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., along with Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, will be interviewing Ms. Deborah Watts. She is the cousin and founder of the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, and that will be August 1st on Voices of Wisdom, hosted by Mrs. Geraldine Hollis and Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. You two had a very phenomenal... Just keep doing what you do, Mr. Joseph Jackson.
Well, thank you. But I really want to tune in on Brother Carlos's show June 2nd. So what would I have to do to tune in, the phone number and the time, because I would like to hear that program. Or would you
do what you did today. Call this number on the same Tribe Family channel, and we will make sure you get that information, okay?
Okay, Ms. Black.
All right,
thank you so much
for being on the show, and if anyone wants to catch up with Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., you can hit him up on Facebook. And Carlos, tell everybody where they can catch up with you at.
You also can catch me up on Facebook as well under Carlos Martin, or under my AKA, on Instagram, it's King Jaquel Martin. That's KingJaquellMartin.
All right. Tribe Family Channel is on Twitter at Tribe Family US, on Facebook.com/Tribe Family Channel. And we are a Gumbo for the Soul International Family brand at www.gumboforthesoulinternational.com. Good night and God bless.
Hello, my name is King Jaquel Martin. I'm a director, I'm an actor, and now I'm an author. And my genius is common because I understand the power of forgiveness. Forgiveness is really never about the other person, but it's about yourself. Forgiveness is not a weakness, but it's a strength. because what it allows you to do is it allows you to collect your thoughts. All of your emotion, it gives you a chance to write them down, to come up with a strategy to make a difference in life. And that's why I wrote this book right here. It's called A War on Friendly Grounds. And A War on Friendly Grounds is all about my life. So what happened to me was I was wrongfully jumped by 8 white officers in my military uniform in front of my home. But that one moment doesn't define my life. And that's why my genius is common, because I use that moment to be able to create all the different things I'm doing right now, such as books, movies, and impacts on other people's lives. That's why my genius is common. And I believe if you understand that today could be your last day and you live it and make today your best day, that your genius is common too. I have a question for you. If you died today, would you give yourself an A-plus on life's report card? If not, and you wake up and you're blessed to see tomorrow, you better live like it's extra credit, because tomorrow's not promised. And if you could live every day like that, there's nothing that can stop your genius. That's why my genius is common. Thank you.
A long time coming, but I know